Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Fierceness of the Mother Global Conference. In this space, we are gathering for powerful conversations with both women and men to reveal and restore the ancient feminine ways of knowing. This event is designed to open up space for all of us to reinstate the principle of the continuance of life as our top priority. Here you are invited to tune into the guidance from the feminine force of creation and learn how this force can be used to revolutionize and revitalize our world. I am your host, Jocelyn Mercado, and today I am honored to be speaking with Susanna Darling Khan. Welcome, Susanna.
Hello, Jocelyn. Hello, everyone. Really good to be here with you.
Thank you so much for being a part of this event, Susanna. And let me just introduce you to everybody here. So Susanna Darling Khan, or the Movement Medicine Woman, as she is often known, is co-director of the School of Movement Medicine alongside her husband, Yaakov Darling Khan, and co-author of Movement Medicine, published by Hay House. Susanna's ongoing learning journey has seen her study in many contexts, including an 18-year apprenticeship with Five Rhythms founder Gabrielle Roth, and studies at University College London in anthropology, gestalt, psychotherapy, and family constellations. Her teaching marries ancient wisdom with neuroscience and intellect to profound effect. Susanna has traveled the world, encouraging people to move beyond their held patterns and self-limiting expectations and discover themselves and their gifts through movement. In order to do that, Susanna has trodden the same path of self-discovery herself. Having taught movement as medicine internationally since 1989, Susanna is celebrated for her visionary weaving of scientific, psychotherapeutic, and systemic ecological paradigms. And I don't know if you just saw that, but this beautiful butterfly just flew by.
Wow.
I thought it might have shown up on the camera.
Wow.
Yeah, and so we are going to...
That's good.
That's a good sign, yes. And so your topic today, Susanna, I'm so excited to dive into this, is called The Radical Dance of Balance, From War to Peace. And we're going to start this one off in a little bit of a different way, rather than instead of how we have on the other interviews, because we're nearing the end of these interviews. This is the final day, and we have our three amazing interviews today, and this is the second to last interview of all. So I would love to share with you, as we talked about before going live, a little bit of what's happened so far. And so it's a little warm out here, so I'm but it's been such a beautiful gathering, such a beautiful community that is coming together in this space. The audience has been so very engaged and asking really brilliant questions. And our speakers have been incredible, you know, so we have both men and women speaking about this topic of how can we bring forth the feminine ways of knowing, the feminine perspective, the feminine gifts that we have within all of us, you know, into the world. And so we've had conversations on everything from, you know, looking at death as an ally, right? How can we use death as our ally to learn more about our life? We've spoken about Vision Quest. We've spoken about the Indigenous elders' view that the feminine is deeply needed, right? That the feminine and women gathering and really accessing the womb space as the space of creation, how deeply that is needed to help transform our world. And we've talked a lot about fierceness, for sure. And we've talked about how fierceness is always has love at its core. And it's so different than anger or rage, right? Because it is a way of taking action in a very directed and precise way, but not from anger or frustration, from a place of love. And we've really, it's been pretty universal in agreement that, you know, the great mother, Mother Earth, is so fierce in her love for us. And then that we as her children, we need to get fierce for her, right? All of us, women and men. So that's a little bit of what we have explored so far.
Thank you. That's really good for me to know a bit more about what I'm speaking into and where you've been. Thank you very much. And the other clarity that we spoke about before we went live was also about what feminine means and masculine means in this context. And you explained that the way you're using those words, because they are used in different ways in different contexts, is that feminine is about the feminine attributes, whether they're in men or women.
Yes. Correct? Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And also something that has come up a lot and that is so important to bring into the conversation is that, you know, we have these kind of polarizing concepts of male and female, right? But there are also people who don't identify with either of those genders, and there are transgender people. So there are so many ways of seeing this, and we want this event to be very, very open and welcoming to all perspectives on gender. So this, yeah, really an important part of the conversation on the feminine. We don't want this to be a polarizing conversation in any way. Mm.
Yeah. Ah, good. Thank you. Okay.
Absolutely. Well, I would love to explore this idea of radical balance. So could you maybe begin by sharing what you mean by radical balance? What does that conjure up for you?
So radical balance, from War to Peace was the full title I think we created together for this, which really has come from Yaakov, that's my husband, and I, our journey, we've been together 33 years now. And what we've, in order for that to be a journey that has gone on and on getting better, we've gone through some real hits and some real confrontations and hugely challenging. It's been the most challenging and the most empowering and beautiful thread in my life. And I think you would say the same. And what we've had to recognize in that is the level to which, even though we were apparently a good marriage, the level to which we were still, until quite recently, unconsciously at war with each other. Though on the surface level, there was a lot of trust. Now, I never thought he was being unfaithful and vice versa, or that kind of trust. You know, we shared our money from the beginning. We've never had any issues about that kind of trust. But on the very, very profound level, do I trust you to see me? Do I trust you to really see who I am in my glory and in my shit and my woundedness and in my potentiality and in the delicate, passionate reaches of my soul? There was not trust, either way around. And for him to become really, I'll speak about me in this, but for me to come to trust him and for him to become trustworthy in terms of that dance of me as the woman, trusting him as the man to be in his power and support me in my power, and for he to be in his vulnerability and also and meet me in my vulnerability and all the different dances between those. That is a dance between us. It's not like he becomes trustworthy and then I trust him. And it's not like I trust him and then he becomes trustworthy. It's a nuanced dance that takes time and goes both ways. And it can so quickly go into the vicious circle where, you see, you're not trustworthy, or you see, you're not trusting me, or, you know, whatever. But it can also go into the positive loop where, in terms of this, in terms of men becoming trustworthy, my trust is what really empowers him to step up to another level of trustworthiness. And his trustworthiness is what allows me to drop into another level of trust and opening. And it's been so profound for both of us. And recognizing the cellular armor. That's what it's felt like in me at times. The armor in myself as a woman that is feels like it's in every cell. It's like defensive little elf there with a spear. Oh, keep out! And that as we've turned traces back, it goes back at least to the witch burnings, if not beyond. It's like transgenerational trauma, basically. And So what we've recognized is that, of course, women have that, but so do men. Men have, we had the witch burnings, but also so did the men. Not only that they were, some of them burnt, but they were also had to stand there. And Pat McCabe, who's one of your Native American elders, she's really recognized this recently, how the men were traumatized by not being able to protect their sisters, their mothers, their daughters, their wives. And she's told us that her people, Native American people of her tribe, have really wondered why were the soldiers from Europe who came so brutalized, so not present in their hearts. And she's been looking back and going, oh, that was part of it, at least. What the witch burnings did to the men, as well as the women, that cut off from their own power as a protective man, as a fierce man in protection of his woman, of his daughter, whoever it was. And that then we've had all the wars and all the being torn away from the lands, and you know, what men have endured as well as what women have endured. So when we talk about the radical balance, we're really, what I'm saying is that it's, we're all actually suffering from undiagnosed cultural, societal, global wide post-traumatic stress disorder, if you like to put it in those terms. And to actually regain our connectedness with ourselves, with each other, with life, with the fabric of life on earth, the ecosystem, the great mother, and stand with her, we all need healing. And that's men and women, and that's the feminine and the masculine in each and all of us, and that we all need each other's help, you know, from wherever we come from in the gender spectrum. Because for me, it's really not men and women, it's like it's a whole spectrum within all of us, and some of us more clearly identify with one end or another. But like wherever we are in that, the attributes of empathy, for example, of body-based knowing, for me, they're not actually feminine attributes, though they're often put in the feminine section. They're human attributes that women often have more access to than men. But listen to this, and I want to say this, and then I want to ask you how you're responding in your body to what I'm saying. Okay. So there's been studies on empathy, and there are different levels of empathy, as I'm sure we all know. There's the empathy which a mouse feels, like if a mouse friend is hurt or is happy, then the other mouse feels it in their body. They feel a resonance of that. And that's kind of basic level of empathy that all mammals have. But then there's another level of empathy which only humans, great apes, dolphins and elephants, I think, have, which is the ability to actually put yourself in the other person's shoes and see it from their point of view, as well as feel it. So this is a story about chimpanzees. So they were studying that kind of empathy, that quite sophisticated kind of empathy with chimpanzees. And they found that, surprise, surprise, the ones with the greatest empathy are the mothers. Okay. Sorry. Except, and this is the amazing line, the one with the biggest empathy is the king, is the top male, the leader, the male leader of the pack. He has more empathy than any of the others, because that's part of his role as a male leader, is to be able to empathize with anyone in his group and know what's happening with them and be able to help them if they're stuck or in trouble, you know, distressed. Which is like, oh my God.
Wow, yes, that gave me chills. That's so beautiful. So beautiful.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
So that's like, and me too, I chills, he's exactly right. It's like, oh, so maybe empathy is only seen as a female attribute because as mothers, mothers and sisters and all that, and it's been more acceptable for women to have that emotional connection. But actually, you know, what kind of figure is more archetypal as a kind of male, strong male archetype than a male leader, chimpanzee? It might have been gorilla, but I think it was chimp in this.
Like, yes, this is...
That's fascinating, isn't it?
Yes. And there is... there's so much that we could talk about here as far as the expectations that we've been trained to place on ourselves or to project onto others, right? About what a woman is or what a feminine person is or what a man is, you know, all these things. And I'll share with you a little bit about an earlier interview because this ties in beautifully. So there we had on day two, Alicia Evans is an animal communicator. And she brought this beautiful, beautiful message forward that the animals are saying, the animals that she's speaking to are saying and demonstrating to her that what humans perceive that they're doing, you know, like what a human perceives that a, you know, quote, vicious dog is doing is very different than what is actually happening in that situation. And there was also a horse that she spoke of, a male horse, like a stallion. And she said he was the most gentle being that she's ever encountered. But we place this perception of a stallion being wild and, you know, untamable and hard and, you know, all of these things. So it's really beautiful in relation to what you're saying here. So how much of what we consider feminine, what we consider masculine, is simply what we've been trained to think, you know, or what we've been
absolutely
almost indoctrinated to think, right? Over many, many, many generations.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's totally speaks to me. And I have horses myself, and they are such incredible people in terms of the level. My four are wild-born Exmoors, so that they're more like training, or not training, but building trust with wild deer or something like that, than with horses as we know them. But it's off the Richter scale, their power and their sensitivity. And we think it's boggled my mind. Realised that the unexamined assumption is that power and sensitivity are opposites, like polarities.
Yes.
And then you're with a wild animal. And it's not, it's like we're designed to have both power and sensitivity as men and women. And somehow that's got divvied up where women have got the sensitive bit and men have got the power bit, you know, in terms of traditional role models. But I think it's really important that men know that they can be in their power and their sensitivity, and that we know we can be in our power and our sensitivity. And that these things actually are if we're gonna use our power well, we need our sensitivity. Yes. And if we're going to actually use our sensitivity well, we need our power, whether we're men and or women or anywhere in between. Yeah. So that's what it means that radical balance is really about this whole dance, and making sure that those attributes are, that we keep remembering that they're human attributes, they're mammalian attributes, they're attributes of life. Yeah.
Well, so what's coming up for me now is that there is this term that gets used a lot, which is the word patriarchy, which is a very polarizing word, right? Mm. Which is, you know, when we say that, we think of evil men, right? Doing things that are not in the interest of all. And there's a lot there, and we are, you know, in a historical sense, we're recognizing that this is something that has been developing over thousands and thousands of years. But I wonder what you have to say on this subject of this, you know, it's kind of the idea of the masculine gone too far, right? Or into that power and control kind of structure, an unbalanced masculine. So what are your thoughts on that, and how can we shift that perception? That's really, really big for all of us right now.
And of course we're aware of the political situation we're in America and in Britain. So I mean, there's so, what would you like me to, what's the question? Because that's such a broad topic. It's such a big topic.
It's a really good topic. Yes. Well, I think maybe the question is What is your sense of the healing that might be needed around this? You know, I think what you shared about from Pat McCabe's wisdom is so relevant here, you know, that all of us have been deeply wounded by certain historical events that were very, very traumatic. And the witch burnings in Europe are a really big one. And there were other traumatic events in different places on the planet, you know.
Absolutely. But the interesting thing about the witch burnings is that they historically precede quite closely just before the colonization of the world by Europeans.
Yes.
So all that decimation of indigenous culture that happened at the hands of the Europeans was just after that. So that trauma was very fresh within our societies, within our people in Europe. And think of the Spanish, the Italians, the French, the English, like it, all of it, all of us had been for generations bathed in that fear. So that's interesting. So that was part of what got exported and visited on the rest of the world. But anyway, sorry, interrupted you. You were getting to the question. Yeah. So what's the sense of the healing, my sense of what is needed?
Yes, right. I know that's a really big question, but that's what I'm wanting for.
Absolutely. I think what's needed for the healing of that is for enough men and women, or women and men, and or enough human beings to stand up together and show a new way. That what the patriarchy I want to actually avoid that word, because the word patriarchy comes from patriarch, and the true meaning of patriarch is a man who takes care of his people, like that king ape, like that king chimpanzee, with empathy for all his other chimpanzees in his troop. So, you know, real patriarchy that is about supporting life and supporting the life and taking care of your place and your domain, that's, you know, we could do with a bit more of that. But what we're talking about, what patriarchy has come to mean in this context is dominion, I mean domination, and a kind of egotistical just need and capacity to subjugate other men, women, and life on earth to one's kind of fantasy of one's own greatness or something like that. And it's mostly done by men, but sometimes also by women. So I want to make it clear that from my point of view, it's not particularly a male attribute. We've seen some women, you know, in who've had power. It's more often been men who've had that position of power and had been able to have that position of power over. And men and women have allowed that. And men and women have allowed ourselves to be subjugated to that because we haven't had enough strength together to stand up and say no. No, absolutely no way. Now, we heard recently, today actually, on the news in England, Extinction Rebellion, which is this incredible new wave of protests for climate, to recognize the climate crisis and act. And there's people of all ages involved, and it's incredibly creative what they're doing and how they're doing it. The police were saying, we won't allow this to happen again. The next wave of protests, we're going to arrest people. We're not going to allow it. And Extinction Rebellion said, well, sorry, that's not really in your hands. There's so many of us. You don't have enough police officers to arrest us all. It's over, guys. If 10,000 of us sit down in the street, you can't arrest all of us. This is where we're here for life, and we're here for the rest of our lives, and you can't just arrest us. So that's the power of the we. That's what I'm talking about. Like, we need to say no, and enough of it. We need, now is the time to get off our asses and to find our voices and to support each other to really make a kind of blockade. Yeah. No, in front of the forest, in front of the pipe, like, enough of us cannot be swept aside by someone in power, however powerful they are. And it's I think that's the shift. It's into this a strength of we that allows individual autonomy, within that, doesn't have to be, we're not all the same, but we share this sense that there is a massive urgency right now. There's a huge urgency, and we've got to, and at the same time, in order to step up together, we have to actually have a calmness and a capacity to listen to each other and work together and be a team and support each other. So there's this real huge spiritual emergency, which is allowing this emergent, how do we really respond to the urgency of this crisis, but in a way that is loving and in a way that is inclusive, and in a way that brings people in rather than frightening people and excluding them, but at the same time that it's really in relationship to the scale of the challenge and the urgency of the challenge.
Yes, this is so powerful. And we're seeing more and more of this happening in different ways. There's such a big movement with the youth.
Yeah.
Young people to speak out peacefully or to organize events or to really take action in big ways. Yeah. And so that's something that is so beautiful and fascinating to see how our young people, even high school aged kids and college aged kids are really rising up, because they're the ones that it's going to fall upon if
exactly. Exactly.
Really incredible. So and I feel that there are so many movements that have been operating kind of underground. It's like the mainstream, the news people don't know this is happening. BBC doesn't know this is happening, right? But there are all of these movements, and I think many of the, you and I and many of the people on the call are a part of this, these different kind of uprisings that have been very underground and below the surface. And now is the time where we're going to all begin taking action in bigger and bigger ways. I feel that really strong, and it's already happening.
It's already happening. And I think for, I don't know how old you are. I guess you're younger than me, but
40. Yeah.
You're right. Okay. I'm 56. So this is, but anyways, nevertheless, it's the same for both of us, that through our lives, I'm sure you were aware of these kind of crises when you were much, much younger.
Yes.
And so we've lived through decades and decades and decades of knowing something is deeply wrong. I'll speak for myself because I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I know it's been for since I was 7 or 8 and I realized we're destroying the earth. It's not okay. What on earth do I do? And then on and on and on and on and on, and all the waves of going to the climate change conference in Copenhagen and going to doing that and having solar power and recycling, and it's like, when is it going to actually shift? And now I think there's a boiled frog syndrome where it's that's why I was a bit crude about getting off our asses. I know we're not on our asses, but at the same time I know I could be doing even more. And the sense of, we've lived with that sense of crisis all this time, and we've done what we could, and we've kind of almost, for me, there's been a sense of maybe we won't be able to really break through into really huge governmental shifts that are needed until it gets bad enough. And now it is bad enough. And the youth are kind of catalyzing it. Us, me, the older gen, the youth, plus David Attenborough. I love it. Greta Thunberg on the one hand, our patriarch. He's a true patriarch in the real sense of the word. He's 90 and he cares passionately about life on earth. And when he speaks, he's the nearest thing that we have to a saint in our country, in England, in Britain. Everybody reveres him. He's like, we know he's speaking the truth. So you've got Greta Thunberg and David Attenborough, like, what an incredible pairing. And then the Extinction Rebellion. And for me, the world changed at Easter. It's like, oh, now, it's now. Come on. I had to say to myself, come on. Okay, come on, wake up. Now, let it out. You don't have to hold back. Now.
Yes. Yeah. And there's two big ideas that are coming up for me here. One is that I feel that this is the fierceness that we're talking about here. Like, this is the fierceness of the children rising up in defense of the mother.
Yes.
And that is so powerful. That is more powerful than the police, more powerful than the patriarchy. It's growing. But also with your area of expertise in movement and becoming connected to our bodies, I feel that this is also such an important part of the waking up process and enabling us to actually take that action, because we're healing ourselves. We're healing ourselves, body, mind, and spirit.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, I would love if you would share a little bit about that. What, how can movement help us to heal and awaken to, you know, if anybody's listening, they don't know what their part in this uprising is meant to be, you know, how could movement help with that? It'd be wonderful to hear from your expertise.
Yeah, what a beautiful question. Thank you. I think that's really important because it can't just happen from here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And isn't it interesting what you said? You said body, mind, and spirit, or body, mind, and soul. And the word that gets missed out then, and that's what we normally say, body, mind, spirit, is the heart. Oh. And body, mind, heart, and spirit. You know, it's more awkward to say because it's four words. Body, mind, heart, and soul, and spirit. But so my understanding with this is that to feel our purpose, to feel who we really are, each of us, like what is the big I am that's in you, that's in me, that's it. I believe in every single person, which is, what is your purpose in this life? Why are you here? Why are you here? Why am I here? Why is she? Why is he? Why are they here? It's a profound existential question, and it's the answer to that question gives our life meaning, which is, I think, what we're all really, really longing for. And it's a question of feeling that answer. I don't think we can think our way to a satisfying answer. We know it in our hearts, and the way that we know our hearts is actually, the way we know what we feel is through being able to feel our bodies. And that sounds, or it may sound strange, but it's actually keeps being corroborated by neuroscience, that interoception, this is a word that you may or may not be familiar with. I know you are, just talking to the other people. Interoception, it means perception of your interior. That means your physical interior from your skin inwards. And it's the stronger your interoception is, the stronger your emotional intelligence about yourself. So you know what you're feeling, you know when you're, you know, very simply, you know when you're hungry, you know when you're feeling sad, you know when you need a hug, you know when, et cetera, et cetera. But also the stronger your empathy with and for others. So people that are able to hurt others, whether it's as a patriarch or as a policeman or as a psychopathic anybody, are people that have, and this is, again, this isn't just me, this is science, but people that have incredibly low interoception. That means they've numbed off to their own sensitivity. And therefore, this comes back from the power and sensitivity thing. Therefore, they can use their power over somebody else and hurt somebody else and not feel it because they've numbed off. They've dissociated from their own body. And guess why they've dissociated? Normally, it's because they themselves were abused. Like 99% of cases, they themselves were abused, and that's how the wheel of suffering turns.
Too much pain. Yeah. There was too much pain for their being.
Yeah, exactly. So then we learn, when there's too much pain for our beings, we learn to dissociate, we learn to disconnect. And it's literally like having anesthetic in the system. You know, when you go to the dentist and you have. So it's like this with habitual anesthetic. And I think that's why we're able to do what we're doing to the planet, is because we've actually, all of us, dissociated. Like, there's been a cultural disassociation because there's been too much pain, because we haven't known how to cope with so many things that have happened. And so we're not quite here. That leaves us feeling really hungry and empty. which makes us incredibly good consumers. Then we're voraciously feeding ourselves on the planet, killing the planet that we come from, that we depend upon for life. And of course, none of it actually satisfies us. And what we need to do is wake up our hearts so we can feel everything again, so we can actually be here. And the best way to feel our heart is to move our body. The best way to feel our hearts is to feel our bodies. And the best way to feel your body is to move your body, but not just move it like it's like an instrument or a machine or something that can just flail around, but to actually to move and feel your movement, to really feel into the vessel that you are, the textures of your muscles. So as you feel it, you're awakening your heart. Then as you let it express, as you dance, as you move, as you let your movement express your heart, you're practicing having that confidence to let what's in your heart out. And people have very profound awakenings on the dance floor. If it's a dance floor which combines expression, that's movement outwards, with feeling, the body interoception, feeling inwards, if those two things are there, along with enough support and breath and encouragement and great kinds of music, it doesn't take long to kind of sift through things and get more deeply into connection with who you are, who I am, and therefore what we're here to do. And then it comes from a very deep place that's rooted, and it's like those trees behind you. I'm really aware of the trees around you, and rooted and lifted, and like it's yes then to life, to oneself, to what I'm here to do, because why not?
Yeah, this is so powerful. And this is something that is, and much thanks to you and Yakov and your work, but this is coming back to us. But this is something that we had so lost and forgotten as an entire westernized culture, really, for so long. And if we look at the ancient people and the indigenous people, you know, song and dance is just an integral part of daily existence.
Exactly.
As well as, you know, deep interconnection with nature.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yes, exactly. It's essential to who we are.
Yes. Totally. Totally. And it's not about dancing to look good. And I think this is one of the ways that women often are far more judgmental of each other in terms of looks than men are. So this is the way we perpetuate and feed misogyny and feed that kind of staying on the outside, is by being obsessed with the surface of ourselves and other women. And I'm not saying men don't do it too, but it's all of that is pulling us away from that deep inner, that, you know, what do I feel? What do you feel? What's going on? And that aliveness that then it can bring us into authentic action that comes from the heart. It's, yeah. I've got one more thing to just drop in, and I can feel you're on the edge of a next.
Yes, I'm trying to decide if I should ask one more thing or go to the Q&A, but yes, please share what you want.
Okay. Well, I'll say my thing and then you make a choice. Yeah. So this is just another image, and it's about horses. And I, first of all, I know we're not horses. I know we're, you know, evolutionarily, we're much closer to chimpanzees than horses. So I'm not pretending that this is an answer to anything. But when I share this story, so many people, especially so many women, have a really strong response. So this is what I'm telling it. So when there's a herd of wild horses, truly wild horses, normally there's a stallion and there's his mares, and the young male, the stallion, the young males, the mares and the babies, the foals. And the stallion can't control the mares. The mares choose whether to stay with him or go off to another herd. You know, in each year, quite a few mares leave and change stallion. They go to another stallion. They go, oh, not sure about this one. Off they go. So he's not in control, but his role is to protect. So it's not to control, it's to protect. That's the first distinction. That's really interesting. So if there is danger, or if the stallion perceives that there is danger, or there might be danger, he races really fast to be between the danger and his herd, between the danger and his mares. He puts himself, he's going to be, if anything is God, it's going to be him. And the young males come and flank him on either side of him. They're like his lieutenants, like side by side, facing the danger. And then everybody waits. And then either the stallion will go to the mares, run, or one of the mares will just realize, okay, danger, will run. And then he'll take the back. He'll either attack whatever is threatening them or follow in the rear, holding the fort, so to speak, from behind. Like, what could be a stronger image for a man than a stallion, a wild stallion? That's what a stallion does. A stallion protects. And that's fierce, the fierceness that we're talking about in the male.
Yes.
The fitness of the mother, that's another, and that is absolute. You know, mother cow will kill to protect her calf. And it's a very, very powerful, and it's a very primal. It's very important that we, as I am talking now, as women, that we access that. But also that we honour that in the male, that fierceness of that stallion who's absolute, his total point of his life is to protect his mares and protect his young. And that's beautiful, and it's a totally male attribute. And I think it's very important for men that they know that that fierceness is also the fierceness of the father, the real patriarch. That's that. And then men, you know, I don't know, I know some men who really want to cultivate the feminine, but really they want to cultivate being themselves and also being a man. For a great proportion of men, it's really important to be a man. And that's cool. And I want a man to be a man in that sense. Go for it, man. Yes, please. We need that. We need that. Those balls. We need that cojones. We need that courage to support my courage as well. And my gentleness. And my love. And my fierceness. But we also need his, as well as hers and everybody else's in between. So that's what I wanted to say. I find that a very powerful image of the stallion. And I was so moved when I first discovered that. It's like, oh my God, that's what male power is meant to do. Yeah. Protect.
Yes, the fierceness of the father.
I love yeah. that. Alongside the fierceness of the mother. Yeah.
And the great mother.
Yeah. Yeah. Standing with the great mother, exactly. Both of us, all of us. Yeah. So that's the answer to your initial question. What do I mean by the radical dance of balance? That's it, that's the answer. Yeah.
Beautiful, thank you for sharing that image with us. Love it. Well, I think let's go to the Q&A, and then if there's time, I'll ask you one more thing that I have on my mind, but I want to give the audience a chance here. So let's see what questions might come up.
Sweetheart, oh, thank you.
Yeah, oh, and before we do that, I want to share your free gift with everyone. And it's a guided movement meditation. So would you like to say a few more words about that, Susanna? And I'll put the link.
Sure. So this is a movement meditation. It's called MESA practice, which MESA stands for the movement energetics of spatial awareness. The movement energetics of spatial awareness. It also means, MESA means table in Spanish, which is used to by a lot of indigenous and sacred cultures to mean the altar. The table, the altar on which you do your sacred work. So MESA is saying, our practice is saying, our bodies are sacred, the earth is sacred. This is where we're doing our work, is with the body. And this particular meditation is taking us into that interoceptive level that I was speaking about, of going inside and really feeling the microscopic textures inside the body, and then coming out into expression and connection with the world and dialogue with the world, and then coming back in again and then coming back out again. So it's practicing this coming in, knowing ourselves, coming into relationship with everything else, coming back again, and having that dialogical dance between me and everything inside the inside world, the inside cosmos, and the external cosmos. And it's me leading people through several crescendos and decrescendos of that energy. And it's a practice that a lot of people have found very helpful. So I hope it does you.
Yes, wonderful. I may do that between this interview and my next interview. It sounds like a great idea.
That would be fascinating, wouldn't it?
Tuned in for the next one. Yes, okay, yes. Thank you for that free gift. So for everyone who's on live, I just put the link to that free gift in the chat. So go and click on that now. And also for all of you who are watching this as a recording later on, just scroll down a little bit below the video and you will see the link there. You can click on it right there. Okay, wonderful. So if anybody has a question for Susanna, please go ahead and ask your question. So you can either raise your hand, there is a raise hand icon. You can tap on that, click on that, and we'll bring you over by video. Or if you want to turn off your video and be audio only, that's certainly fine too. And I welcome everybody to be visible and raise your hand for your question, because we love engaging with you in that way. But also, you can certainly put your question in the chat if you would like to. So go ahead and ask your questions here. Let me just see if there's any, if there were any questions posted as we went along. Yes, and in the earlier interview today, there was a very fancy caterpillar that crawled up on me. This is what I like sitting outside, because we get messages from animals and everything. Very fancy caterpillar. And then Deborah was just noting here in the chat that it's beautiful that that caterpillar has now turned into the butterfly that flew by when we started. Very powerful. Okay, so let me see here.
Yeah, and also if there aren't questions, there may be people that just want to say something about how what we've been sharing has impacted in you, or, you know, it could be a question, it could be a statement. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You are all very welcome to share your insights, your feelings, anything that's come up for you as you've listened to this talk. You're very welcome to share that as well as questions. Everybody's very quiet. I know they're not shy at this point. We've, you know, been through so much together over the last week here. There are a lot of comments about how powerful this is, and I agree with this, and wonderful discussion. And Nara is saying, here's a share. Movement and body awareness is to me an exercise of incarnating again and again. That's very deep.
One of the things that was incredible about the Extinction Rebellion protests that were happening in London over Easter was that Waterloo Bridge, which became this kind of garden bridge because the protesters closed it for that time, and then they brought the trees and plants and flowers, and it was just became this beautiful garden that other Londoners were visiting as they just traveled through. And that was being held by a lot of people that do movement medicine. So there was a significant presence of movement medicine awareness there that was helping people stay grounded, stay connected, stay in their bodies, stay in their hearts. They were loving the policemen. A lot of policemen started dancing with them and singing with them and were really touched by the love they were receiving, so that those barriers between the protesters and the police actually dissolved. And then the police got a bit freaked out, and then they went back to being policemen. And then it was very powerful. And then the singing and the dancing and the praying and the really staying with how we do this is as important as what we're doing, how we're doing, and how we're not polarizing with the police, how we keep seeing the souls inside those people.
Yes, yeah. Beautiful. We do have two questions here. So Helen, let me bring you over. And these are raised hands. So Helen first, and then Deborah, you will be next. I also have a little inchworm inching around here. So cute.
You have a what?
There's an inchworm.
Oh, hello, inchworm.
It's measuring.
Right.
Hi, Helen. It's not letting me unmute you. Could you click the unmute button on your side? There we go. Hi, welcome.
Hi, can you see me okay? It looks very dark, actually.
Yeah, it looks a little, you don't have anything over your camera at the top of your phone.
No, I think it's just because the lights are off.
Yeah.
I can see.
It's going to be a bit better.
That's much better.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if I've got a question as such. I just thought I'd be brave just because I haven't actually come like live onto the video. But I suppose as well, maybe I felt inspired because I absolutely love dance. I've always loved dance. And I think, you know, all of what you've been saying is kind of, you know, it's all sort of making sense to me. And I am really interested in following up what you've been talking about, actually. And especially, I think, also what you were saying about the police. And I'm just thinking about my own work as well. And, you know, just team dynamics. And I'm sure, you know, all of this thing kind of comes into it together. But I mean, maybe coming back to the dance, like I love tango, absolutely love tango, and I've always thought about that as quite a sort of mindful way. But I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll look at your you know, the thing that you sent, the gift. But I don't know. I'm just quite interested in this, and I thought I'd share that. I don't know if I've got a question as such.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can look at, if you just look at darlingkhan.com, that's my husband Yakov and my website, that has basically has brought together everything that we do, including the School of Movement Medicine. Maybe, I mean, what you're saying, what is your work, Helen? Are you able to say?
Yeah, I'm a psychologist, clinical psychologist.
Mm. Great, yeah. Good for you. And what's the context in which you work?
Well, I was working in a psychology service, like in a trauma service. Mm. But, you know, I think, as you say, I think everybody's a bit traumatized, staff and clients alike, and you know, the power dynamics and whatever that kind of played themselves out. I don't know. But I just thought it was quite interesting when, you know, you mentioned about the police and stuff, and I suppose there was something about maybe, I don't know, like them getting into the flow or them kind of I don't know. Yeah.
I think there was a pull to join because they weren't being othered. They weren't being made.
Yeah.
The people that were there were very consciously not making them the enemy, but knowing that they were people doing their role as well as they could, given what they knew and what the parameters of that role were. But that actually they, like all of us, are love and need love. And that was kind of discombobulating for some part of what was going on with the police. It was really like they would open up and then they would be shocked by themselves and then close down again and then open up and then it must have been very kind of cognitively dissonant to have protesters who were not willing to play the game of polarization.
Yeah, I love that.
That takes a huge power on behalf of the protesters who were basically saying we're in this together.
That
is what the climate change crisis has brought us, is we are in this together, we're profoundly in this together. But the thing that brought me to dance was I was looking for my path. I was a Gestalt psychotherapist and an anthropologist, and I was really looking for how do I follow my sense of service as part of what's happening on Earth. Mm. And I went into this very strong process, ceremonial process, with a Native American teacher. And eventually I saw this snake, not even myself, I saw a snake of people of all ages and all cultures and all colors singing and dancing in this beautiful snake through the Amazon rainforest. And I was in the vision, I was above and I was just watching it. And it was to do with the forest, it's to do with the trees, it's to do with indigenous cultures, it's to do with our own indigenousness. And it's to do profoundly with singing and dancing, not as a way to look good or as a way to perform, as ceremony, as healing, as calling the spirit of healing, as finding a way to be together and find our power as humanity. So that's what it means to me, dance. And I'm hearing something. Cool. Something is calling you, and
it is. You're right. It is. yeah, there would be some sort of alignment or synchronicity or something, because that yes, dance has always meant so much to me. So yeah, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Good luck with following that wherever it takes you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, Helen. Thank you so much for sharing and for being visible here in the space.
Yeah.
Have a beautiful day. Okay, and Deborah, I'll bring you over next. And then Jewel, you'll be next after Deborah.
Deborah.
Hello.
Hi, welcome. Hey, you're visible.
Yes. That's amazing. Where are you in the world, Deborah?
I am in Toronto, Canada.
Okay.
Susanna, yes, yes. And it's a pleasure to be here today. I have a day off work, so it's really great to be able to participate in this way. And I have watched you and seen you online with some of other Jocelyn's other webinars as well. So, yeah, this is great, because while I am not a dancer, I have participated in many, again, it was Native American shamanic, like eagle dances, fire dances, which have always been so healing and so transformative. And it's like, it takes me out of my body, but also keeps me in my body at the same time. It's like a paradox. Mm-hmm. It grounds me. And we have, you know, this is a great call, because I've forgotten, we have this fantastic dance movement here on Friday nights, and I actually might go tonight because of this. Yeah. It's called The Move, and it's based on the five rhythms. Mm-hmm. And again, it's just conscious dancing, a free form dancing. There's no talking or communication with other people. There's no, you know, body contact, unless there's, you know, there's a little bit of a signal if you want to do some body, you know, contact dance, but otherwise it's just free form dancing. And I loved going every Friday night. I would go, and I haven't been in, it's probably 2 years now. So, and I'm just feeling the feeling, you know, that I get from being there. And so I just really wanted to say thank you and to honor what you do, you know, through dance and through movement, because it's amazingly transformative and healing, and I need to get back to it again.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, that's great to be reminded. It's so easy, isn't it, to forget what is good for us. It's so easy to kind of lose touch with that. And then that's great. It's great that you've got somewhere local to go and move and remember and let go. And there's no communication with words, but there's a huge amount of communication through the body. It's the original sign language.
Yes.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that, Deborah. I'm so glad that you received this beautiful reminder today. I love it.
Thank you.
Have fun dancing.
Okay.
Wonderful, wonderful. So Jewel, let me bring you over now. I love everybody getting visible here. Hi, Jewel.
Hi, Jocelyn, again.
Yes, hi again. Good to see you.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Hi, Jewel. Where are you speaking from?
Susanna, I'm in Hebden Bridge. Heard of that? Right.
Yes, I do. Not that far. I'm in Devon, so we're...
All right, okay. Yeah. Okay, but we're in the same... we're in the same cultural zone.
We are.
You know, yes. And obviously, this is all. I love that it's global and we're connecting across that. But I also very much resonate with a lot of the things you're saying. You know, like David Attenborough, a softy for him. But XR particularly. I'm a psychologist retired, educational. But I have struggled hugely with the grief. I've been setting up good grief groups and trying to find better ways to work with it, and using Joanna Macy,
yes,
as trying to draw out positive sense and connect up in some way, that being in touch with what's happening, like you, from really early, I knew that I was a witch, and I knew that what we were doing to the planet was wrong, and I'm nearly 70. And I just can't help despairing about things. I mentioned this a bit the other day when with Jocelyn, but I just wondered what insights you have around that. Hard one. I don't expect you to have any answers, but I suppose it's just owning the horror and turning that into some kind of a positive connection between us. I'd love any insights you have.
Well, thank you very much for bringing that up. I think it's really, really important to recognise. And I certainly completely recognise it in myself. Interestingly, connected to, you know, at Easter, this last Easter in Britain, we had the juxtaposition of Extinction Rebellion closing the Waterloo Bridge and a lot of London down, Greta Thunberg and David Attenborough like letting out that Netflix series about the climate, the planet in climate crisis and biodiversity crisis. And then the Labour Party made that, declared the climate crisis, and then now Theresa May has done something. It's like suddenly the mainstream is making noises, at least, that they're aware. And I felt this, like, suddenly a gateway, for me, a gateway opened. Like, oh my God, it's possible now. Like, and now we've got to walk through this gateway. We've got to dance through it urgently, but calmly, like together. Come on, people. Come on now. Now, wake up now. Now, wake up. And what I felt in that, as my sense of the gateway opening, a gateway that's been closed for my lifetime and your lifetime, as I've experienced it, it's like, however much anyone pushes, it's just remain resolutely closed in terms of the massive level of change that's needed. Suddenly I felt like the gateway's opening. And then what the first thing I felt was enormous grief. Like, I felt like I'm, because of the chink of a possibility of appropriate action in relationship to this, now I'm able to feel more of the grief that has been there over the decades that I haven't and we haven't been able to feel, because it's been impossible to feel it without feeling one. I mean, I have felt it, but I didn't realize how much there was I wasn't feeling. So the first thing I needed to do was acknowledge that. And I had some very strong catharsis myself and with friends. And then in the summer long dance, which is the big ceremony of giving back to life that we do once a year, and it's a dance event and 180 of us dancing in a tent in Somerset, in a marquee in Somerset, and singing and dancing and praying. And we also raise a lot of money. This year we raised over £100,000 for charity, including £38,000 for the Pachamama Alliance, which really stands for the people of the Amazon. And they're very connected also with Gianna Macy. So in the middle of this, I led a process which was all about the grief and feeling all the feelings that are connected to how we feel in relationship with the plants and the trees and the how we feel in relationship to all the animals that are going extinct, etc., all the fish and the whales and the dolphins, how we feel in relationship to all the birds and the insects. And there was this absolute kind of meltdown of feeling, which we were able to dance and support each other in dancing and then speaking. Somebody else led a truth mandala, Alajana Macy. And I think, and this is the same thing, like unless we're in connection with our bodies, we don't have the capacity to feel these feelings. Unless we have the resource and the support of other people, it can't be done alone. You know, Melodoma Somei, I'm just gonna get his book because this is a very good resource. Melodoma Somei.
I just need to get one. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure Jocelyn can put it on the thing. So this book, Melodoma Patrice Somei, The Healing Wisdom of Africa.
That's for Jocelyn to see.
Yeah. So, amazing.
She told me to get this the other day.
Okay, here's another one. He speaks a lot about grief and about, for them, for the villagers in his tribe in West Africa, the idea of solitary grief is a complete, like, what? They don't understand it. Grief is always something that you share collectively. So we've lost our grieving rituals, and that's what we were recreating in the long dance. And in order for us to feel our love and our joy and our that kind of power, we have to be able to cleanse the well of our grief by grieving. And Joanna Macy says, the reason we feel such grief is because we love this world. No, the reason we feel grief for the world is because we love the world. The reason we feel grief for the planet is because we love the planet. The reason we feel grief for life is because we love life, and it's love that will get us through. So if anything does, so not to be frightened of the grief, but to embrace it. And I think support and connection is absolutely essential. Mm. And yeah, I mean, that sounds like you're already on that track, absolutely. So I don't know if what I'm saying is helpful, but that's where I am with it.
Have you heard of Preston New Road by any chance? PNR, fracking. Fracking in fracking. Lancashire.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that fracking. Yeah,
yeah. That's been my main space for the last 3 years. I'm a Lancashire nana, and what I wanted before that, I've done like activist trauma support work and tried to, you know, the sort of things you're talking about. Share it, open it up. Don't be ashamed of it. We can support each other, but it is so hard. I don't know what magic you've got, because getting people to share, to own that pain, you know, and the nanas, we're a really close group, we're really powerful together, but it is so hard to you know, we dance together outside the gates, we do the elm dance and it's all beautiful, but people just don't seem, you know, able to really openly share their grief and their pain. Sorry, Justin, I'm probably going to talk too long about this. Maybe we could talk another time. But, you know,
Come and dance, Jewel. Come and dance with us.
Too far, can't talk to them. I'm an ordinary.
No, there's people up there. There's people in Manchester who do movement medicine. You know, just have a space where you at least can unburden yourself and be with other people who, because I think it's, for me, it's so important that movement, the kind of movement work we're talking about, and planetary consciousness and activism come together, that it's not just activism. And then the people that are doing movement are thinking about themselves and their own incredible yogic body. Like it needs to, all these movements need to connect.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah, but you know, yes, how to do that. We'll talk more, hopefully. I don't take any more time, but
all right, bless you, and thank you for your work. That sounds really, really beautiful. The Lancashire Nanas,
I'll look out. We are,
yeah, I'm sure you are. I can see that. Thank you, bless you.
Thank you, Jewel. Thank you so much for sharing today. Have a wonderful day.
Bye. Very important.
Thanks, Jocelyn.
Yeah, thank you.
Beautiful. So, yeah, I love hearing from everybody. It's so, so wonderful. We have one more hand raised and two questions as well. So are you okay to stay on a little bit longer?
Mm-hmm. I just don't want to miss whatever your last thing was you wanted to say, Jocelyn.
Okay.
Because you've been the consistent, you're the hostess, the host of all this whole happening. And I think as we're coming close to the end of the series, I want to make sure we fold that in.
Yeah. Okay. I'll make sure to share mine.
Okay. Great.
Yes. So let me bring Daisy over here. Daisy also has her hand raised. Hi, Daisy. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you guys?
Good.
Well, I just wanted to take some time to say thank you very much. It really hit home talking about the masculine side and, you know, the monkeys. I have all boys in my household. And I feel like it's a constant fight to always, you know, defend my boys in so many ways, you know, older, you know, elders, you know, women talking about, you know, how bad men are, you know. So, you know, constantly fighting, you know, and defending that stigma and many more. So it feels like, you know, we're, you know, how do I raise these boys? You know, protecting their sensitivities or protecting who they are, you know, but being able to live in a free life and environment. So I just wanted to say thank you so much. It really, really, really hit home for me to hear the story of the monkeys and also the dancing as well. We forget, you know, I love dancing and I haven't danced for such a long time. And, you know, it just brings me back to, okay, I see a lot of clarity. It's all about love. And just got to keep going and doing that. So thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of my heart. I really, really, really enjoyed this this session.
Oh, thank you so much, Daisy.
Thank you. I mean, that is so poignant, isn't it? Did she say she has five boys?
In total, there are seven boys.
Wow.
Seven boys.
Wow. I mean, thank you, Daisy. That really, that dilemma of how do you raise boys, it's like they have got to have their masculinity upheld as a positive thing, or them as boys, that you can be a really great man and you don't have to sit on your strengths to be a great man, to be a beautiful man, to be a good man. And
exactly. Yeah.
And they need
they are so, I was going to say, they are so emotional. Right? I feel that they are more emotional than women. And, you know, and for them to be openly expressive about their emotions, it's unheard of. So, I totally understand it. That's why I'm so grateful for, you know, what you have talked about today.
Bless you. It sounds like you're doing an amazing job with them. And I think male role models, you know, good male, strong, dependable role models are so important. And there are some, you know, it's like there really are some incredible men out
right.
there. Yeah. Yeah, even if they're not, yeah, and it's the boys to see.
Here's one of them.
Hey, hi. All right, great. Yeah, it's incredibly important. I was reading something recently by a young boy who was like 17, and he said his grandfather was a miner, and he said my grandfather was like an old-fashioned man. He was a protector and. He was protected the family and he was very powerful and he said, and I know that there's a thin line between protection and domination. But he said, it's so hard knowing, trying to know what to do with my own power when I hear everything about toxic masculinity. All the time people are talking about toxic masculinity. What should I do then? Should I shoot myself? Like, no! But his anguish, like he didn't know what to do with his power. And we've got to support the men, the young men, to find a positive place for their power. Because they need it. And we need it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We really need it, along with the young women's strengths. We need their strength. And I have a son. We have one son who's very, very strong and very, very gentle and powerful on behalf of the planet and other people and women. And he's a noble young man, and it is possible. Yeah.
Yes, I know. And things are changing at such a rapid pace, and I mean, life is great now, but I can't imagine it to be even better, you know? I think it, with the generations that are coming up, it's just going to be brighter, you know? It's going to take a lot of work, you know, with a lot of people that aren't on the same page, but, you know, I think we're all okay.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, bless you and your boys and the man.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Bye, man.
Thank
you. You guys have a magical day.
You too.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Well, I love it because this leads in right into what I wanted to ask. And I'm just reflecting on all this, you know, all that we've talked about here and in other interviews, but this idea that, you know, we have these perceptions and expectations, and that is influencing us in how we act. So looking to the future and thinking about the young people, what do you think that we can do to best support our young people in one aspect, coming into their bodies, honoring the temple of their bodies and the knowing that comes from there, and also just in accessing their innate wisdom so that they will know what to do and be empowered. What comes up for you around that?
That's really interesting. I belong to it's just nice to be able to share this here. I belong to a women's group called IGWIG. IGWIG stands for IGWIG, which is Intergenerational Women's Intergenerational Group. Okay. And it was created originally by myself and somebody else who's exactly the same age as me. In fact, she's one day younger than me. And her two daughters, I'm like a godmother in different ways, or an auntie to her daughters. And her daughters are incredibly switched on, incredibly intuitive, potent, creative, beautiful young women who nevertheless, despite having had her as a mum, who's an amazing woman, an amazing mother, who does also movement work, despite that and the health of their kind of overall context in which they grew up, they still have had really strong issues about their bodies, about how their bodies look. And they've really felt the tyranny of the culture that we're all exposed to about the surface. You know, what does it look like? What do I look like? Oh, it's not thin enough. It's not this enough. It's not that enough. And we were really aware of this wish to support, as older women, to support them. But at the same time, how much we are supported by them. So this is my answer. It's like, I think we need to support, but also recognize their power and be supported by them and have this kind of mutuality. Because when we also say we as the older generation need your strength and we want to support you, but we also need to be supported by you, it's like then we help them stand up in their strength. It's not just like nannying them. They don't actually need that. They're like Greta Thunberg, her parents didn't support her to go to do the school strike on Fridays. And I wonder if they actually, in a way, strengthened her by saying, no, no, we don't agree with this. No, you have to go to school. And she was like, no, I am, because it's the right thing to do. And I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of that, but I think there's a seeing them, seeing, and this is what we can do for everybody. I think we all need support, and we all need to recognize that everybody could do with truly being seen and being affirmed, being acknowledged, whether that's somebody you pass on the street or your neighbor's 15-year-old or, you know, your own son or daughter, but that to keep affirming the particular soul essence that is somebody, which means paying attention to them, actually seeing who's there. No, not the mask, but who what they're feeling, and mirroring people back to themselves, mirror and our young people, and to let them know they're not alone. You know, we have failed to pass on so far a planet that is in good order, but we're not lying down, and we're not finished, we're not over. We are with them, we're supporting them, we're in this together. I think we all could do with more active acknowledgement from other people. Active, not just like generalized praise, like, oh, that's great, you're amazing. Like, that doesn't mean anything. It can just be said over and over again, and it's just like, it's nothing. But actual specific soulful seeing of each other and witnessing of each other in our pain, our wounds, but also our beauty and our strengths, and that which is emergent, that's what supports it to come out. And yeah, so that's my answer.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Thank you. Well, Susanna, this has been wonderful sharing with you today and sharing with everybody here. So thank you so much for all of the wisdom and just the beauty of what you have shared here today.
Thank you. Jocelyn, thank you. I just wanted to kind of do what I just said. I think you're doing an incredible job here. And we just were speaking about some things that are difficult. And there's such room for polarization and enemyizing of each other. And I really want to acknowledge the way you've been with me both prior to this and our exchanges and during this interview, and how the openness and the quality of wide listening that you bring, and interest and support for me, for everyone that's listening, is really, really special. Thank you for doing what you're doing. I can feel you're being driven by some very big sense of cosmic generosity, or that's what you're of your service to the planet. And thank you for facilitating these conversations so beautifully.
Thank you so much. It means so much to me, and it is absolutely my pleasure to be doing this work and talking with you today and talking with all of the speakers in this conference. I this is truly a big part of my mission. So thank you for acknowledging that.
Yeah. Well, right on. Right on. Respect. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And yes, I want to say also thank you for everybody who's attending live here. I hope you've really enjoyed this beautiful, beautiful sharing from Susanna. And we do have one more live interview today, which will be with Claire Dubois. And that will be at in just about a little over a half an hour at 5 p.m. New York time. So come back to this same Zoom link then. I'm sure it will be a beautiful conversation. So I hope to see you there. And yes, Susanna, thank you so much for your presence.
Thank you.
I brought into this gathering. It's been really powerful.
Thank you very much, Jocelyn. Enjoy that dance. Enjoy the trees.
Beautiful. All right. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Bye.